You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. If he does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your host, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another edition of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This being your breakdown edition, as we have a couple of NDSU wins to talk about. An 88-79 win of NDSU basketball over the Fighting Hawks from Grand Forks. And we also have another FCS playoff victory to talk about. And joining me in person is Ross Uglum. Ross, this is our first ever live edition, you and I in the same room recording. How are things going with you today?
It's great. I think we tried to do this one other time, and it fell through. I was in the Twin Cities. We weren't able to get together. But yeah, I'm down here for some stuff that my fiance is doing. I'll be back in Fargo later on in the week, of course, for Friday night under the lights, which is something that we'll get to a little bit later as well. Some exciting news from a Bison Report perspective. But yeah, it's man, it was a great time to be a Bison this weekend. You get the win over Wofford, advance to the seventh straight semifinal, which is an NCAA FCS record. You get the win over UND in men's hoops. And then wrestling actually had a home duel with number 18 in the country, Central Michigan, and took that one as well. So it was a fine weekend for NDSU athletics for sure. But there's an even more exciting weekend coming up.
All right, so let's get into it with the news part of the podcast here. And we always have to start with injuries. Ross, you were at the press conference yesterday. What did you glean from Coach Kleiman, and where are we at injury-wise heading into the semifinals?
Well, it just felt like it hadn't been asked in a while. Checked in on the guys that we haven't seen, guys that haven't really been discussed. So Adam Cofield hasn't returned from his injury. Dom Davis hasn't returned from his injury. And Lance Dunn, of course, we know was thought to potentially be out for the season. The good news is, though, that they've all run this past week. They all have run, and there's much more to playing football than being able to run in a straight line. I completely understand that, no question about it. But just to hear that those guys are running and testing and at that point in their rehab is very exciting. And I think, you know, what we definitely are shooting for with Cofield, Davis, and Dunn, all guys I think you would have on your traveling squad if you went to Frisco, Texas for a national championship game, I think they'd be on it. So win this game, and you've got a three-week break where you can rehab these guys and get them ready to go for a potential FCS championship game. And, I think good signs on the health front, finally, for an NDSU team that has lost 13 guys to season-ending injuries.
And when we look at injuries, we've talked about them throughout the season. Nick DeLuca, among them, coming back from injury. And here we are. We just got word today that Mr. DeLuca and Mr. Kuhnert are named first-team All-Americans. Does that surprise you, Ross? And can you reflect at all on kind of the season they've had here in 2017 to earn that kind of a status?
Yeah, I think potentially the Kuhnert one is a little bit more on the potentially his name. He's been a very good player there for four seasons. But, you know, in my opinion, this was not his best season and potentially not his first team All-American season. But the people that vote on this stuff, I mean, they recognize Austin Kuhnert's name, and probably that has more to do with it than anything. I think he was definitely an all-conference level player, but I just think injuries have taken a toll on Austin, and this was not his best season as a Bison. Nick DeLuca, though, first team All-American, completely makes sense. He was very, very good this season despite some injury issues. And never really operating at 100%, but man, he is certainly, I think, NDSU's best professional prospect since Carson Wentz. So super impressive from him what he's been able to do this season. Got that Senior Bowl invite, which is huge in the pre-draft process. And he's been impressive. I think, you know, we'll talk about it a little later. The one guy, though, I really truly believe was a first team All-American. And, you know, we still haven't seen the stats team. We still haven't seen Hero's team. I think Hero does a team.
Yeah.
But Robbie Grimsley was not named an All-American, and I've got issues with that.
Yes, we'll get to that a little bit later. And I can't believe we've almost gotten 5 minutes into the podcast here without mentioning the news from over the weekend. Everyone has heard about it. Adam Schefter came out with the definitive news, I believe, on Monday that Carson Wentz is now out for the season. He has a torn ACL. The number one seeded Philadelphia Eagles are no longer going to have Carson for the rest of their playoff run coming up here. So what are your thoughts on Carson's torn ACL? And again, do we have a time frame off the top of our heads in terms of when he could recover?
I mean, the best case scenario for an ACL is going to be 9 months. That's absolutely best case scenario. So 9 months from right now would be August. So, you know, if I had to take a guess, I would say the way to go about next season for the Eagles would be to do what a lot of teams do, which is the PUP. And the PUP is you don't practice during camp. You get placed on the physically unable to perform list, and you're ineligible to play for the first 6 weeks of the season. After 6 weeks, you're eligible to practice, and then you can make your way back onto the team. That gets you at least, you know, September would be 10 months from now, and then that's the start of the season. 6 weeks in that, now you're at that 11.5, you know, 11 to 11.5 month time frame. Sort of. Mm-hmm. And you get into a place where you can realistically expect a guy to be able to compete. This is not the Teddy Bridgewater knee explosion, right? You know, I mean, this was described as right away. It was described as potentially not even a full ACL tear.
Well, we saw him get hit at the goal line. It was one of the weirdest mechanisms I've seen for a torn ACL in quite some time. I mean, he comes back into the game. He doesn't go off immediately. He throws a touchdown pass. And then they decide to take him back to the tunnel. So I don't know that if this is a normal ACL tear, but we'll see what they find.
The blue tent of despair.
Yeah, the blue tent of despair indeed. So go ahead.
Anyway, this, like I said, it's a rough deal. You know, I think PUP is probably going to be what they do. But, you know, the one thing about Carson Wentz is he's super aggressive as far as attacking rehab. And basically just attacking adversity. I would anticipate if anybody was going to be ahead of schedule, you know, it would be Carson Wentz. And it's just tough when these things happen, you know, towards the end of a season. But I think, you know, you even saw like Adrian Peterson, I believe his ACL injury before, I think his best season as a pro came in like week 12, you know. So he was on that 9 month recovery schedule, not that 12-month recovery schedule. It's all different, and he is a freak of nature. There's no question about that. But there is precedent for him not to have to miss time next year. I just, with a guy like him and a roster like Philadelphia's, where I believe pretty firmly you can go 4-2 with Nick Foles to kick off next season, I would just leave him alone. You know, I don't want my franchise quarterback rushing back from an ACL injury. So Coach Klieman was very emotional. Everybody, I think, around the North Dakota State program is very emotional. Carson is, without question, you know, NDSU's highest profile athlete of all time, one of the highest profile guys in the NFL right now, period. And it's just a problem the NFL has been dealing with all season, is really big name guys being lost for the year.
All right, so let's get back to the current team and jersey update. I know that folks were excited to see what the jerseys were last weekend. Do we know what we're going to be seeing for Friday Night Lights?
Yeah, we spread some hashtag fake news last week.
Oh, did we now? Not always a good thing when we do that for the brand of the podcast.
No, the Gold Rush is usually accompanied by gold uniforms. The Gold Rush looked beautiful in the stands, as it usually does. My mom always complains about the Code Green games because the stands look empty. That deep green makes everything kind of look empty, and the gold really pops on TV. But this will be yet another Gold Rush, and it will be accompanied by the gold uniforms and the Harvest helmets. NDSU is undefeated in both the gold uniforms and the Harvest helmets, and they'll put that on the line under the lights of Friday night. Speaking of the lights of Friday night, we've tried this once before.
I think we've tried it about two or three times yeah. where every time. So the news is I'm coming to Fargo Friday night. Friday yep. night lights. I'm going to be up there to help Ross cover the game. I remember I was supposed to come to the season opening game either this year or I think I was supposed to come to both games, the season openers. One of them I got to, I believe, Monticello, and my car essentially exploded.
Sure.
And I had to turn around. I mean, here we are 72 hours away. I'm planning on coming. I have every intention of coming. So it's going to be fun. I have yet to see a Fargo, a NDSU game in the Fargo Dome. Figured we might as well make it sure we happen for the semifinals, see if we can't keep this streak in terms of with the uniforms undefeated. So with that being said, let's talk a little football recruiting because as we do sit here today, we are 8 days away. And I would imagine if you got Coach Klieman behind, you know, off the record and you asked him about this early signing period with especially NDSU's amount of success, Ross mentioned it already, seven straight trips now to the semifinals. And with 8 days away and now the first year of the early signing period, that's kind of really thrown a wrench into things in my eyes in terms of how NDSU can kind of attack things. Because not only do they have to focus on trying to get back to Frisco, they also have to kind of focus on how are we going to finish out this recruiting class with only 8 days away. So the only thing to really note since the last time we talked is NDSU is going to have Minnesota's Mr. Football on campus on Friday, a linebacker from Eden Prairie by the name of Antonio Montero. I've seen him in person a few different times. In my eyes, I think he's absolutely up there for the best linebacker in the state. I mean, that's why he is named Mr. Football. He played a huge part on offense and defense and even special teams for the Eden Prairie Eagles as they won another state championship. I believe he had 20-plus touchdowns on the offensive side of the ball. He played a ton of linebacker for Eden Prairie as well, over 118 tackles, I believe, and he was also the kicker. So there's not a whole lot else he did not do for that team. It sounds like he's going to be coming in on Friday. I would be shocked to hear that NDSU does not offer him a scholarship, especially everything that happened with Chandler Pulvermacher now going to Iowa State. So the other word I have from sources close to the NDSU program is they are still in evaluation mode at places like wide receiver, trying to replace Sean Engel's scholarship. There's also been talk of taking another defensive back with Riley Moss taking a gray shirt at Iowa. Names right now, 8 days away. I think the staff really does want to play things a little bit closer to the vest, so not a whole lot of people find out. So Antonio Montero is really the name to know right now, Ross. But let's get into this game that occurred Saturday night in Grand Forks. This 88-79 victory for NDSU. You kind of look at this game. We've been harping on him, I believe, the last 2 weeks, and that was piece move of Paul Miller. He ends up being named the player of the week after dropping 30 points, 12-16 shooting from the floor. It was about time Paul Miller got cooking, and he got cooking in just the right time in Grand Forks.
Absolutely. I want to make special mention. I already said this on Twitter, and it might sound like I'm kissing his ass because he has me on his airwaves all the time. But, man, what an impressive Saturday from Voice of the Bison, Jeff Culhane, to call an FCS playoff game that starts at 11 o'clock in the morning, which means you probably have to be up and around the arena at about 7:30.
Yeah.
And then to get in a vehicle and drive 75 miles north to go to one of the worst places on earth in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and call an away game, you know, and to provide in really a barn burner, you know, two 20-minute halves of excellent basketball play-by-play. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Jeff. And, man, I'm going to go on a little rant here. I cannot stand anything about the Big Sky Conference. It all just drives me nuts. They're overrated in football. They're overrated in basketball. Actually, their champions usually end up being a 15 or 16 seed. So maybe they're correctly rated
adequately,
in basketball.
Adequately seeded anyway.
They do this dumb thing called Pluto TV, which is like live TV kind of on an app, which the Big Sky instead of, they used to have like Big Sky, Watch Big Sky app. They used to have the Watch Big Sky app.
Okay.
It was actually a pretty stable app and you could generally watch all sorts of stuff on it. Okay. I think they even had like replays available.
Mm-hmm.
This Pluto TV business takes all of the Watch Big Sky stuff and puts it out live. But that crashed with 18 minutes left in the second half.
Oof.
And I did not go to Grand Forks because I had enough stuff going on with, you know,
the football game
that I didn't go to Grand Forks. So Jeff brought me home. I appreciate that. It used the Bison 1660 app, and he brought me home so that I could get kind of an audio version of everything that went on. And then, you know, I go in to write something about the basketball game, and I go into Pluto TV and I look for the replay. Boys, Pluto TV is not watch ESPN. There is no replay. There's basically no digital proof that NDSU even played UND. And that's the end of my diatribe against the Big Sky Conference. I hate it. I hate it all. And I wish UND would stay there forever. But that's the deal. Is that that's why there wasn't a ton. I'm gonna get something up about the basketball team after the game against Valley City tonight. Anyway, all right, getting into the game now that I've completely taken this podcast off.
All right, let's talk about the 11-0 start that NDSU had to start the game. I mean, in the first half alone, they shot 58% from the field, over 50%+ from three. If that's how you want to end a three-game losing streak, that's how you do. You come out red hot and you shoot the lights out to start in the first half.
Yeah, and a big part of that was Tyson Ward. We'll talk a little bit about him later, but really like just the step back three that he splashed in his defender's face, kind of not even a in the flow of offense type of shot. I mean, he just popped one and nailed it. And Samuelson had a corner hit. They just were shooting the ball well right out the gate, and they jumped on UND, and that lead wavered between 11 and 15 points for a lot of the first half until the Fighting Hawks finally went on a run. But, you know, a wire-to-wire victory is difficult in college basketball, specifically on the road. And so jumping out on a team 11 to nothing creates separation and constantly has the other team coming back and expending energy. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge part of that game, was the expensive energy, because Cortez Seals, and we want to keep our thoughts and prayers with this family, but Cortez Seals was not at this game due to a death in the family. And that basically rendered UND seven deep. And that's not a life they want to live. Dave Richmond has rotations that are seven deep because Dave Richmond has Jason Miller as his strength and conditioning coach and has guys that are used to 38-minute performances. But I don't think that a Geno Crandall was ready to play 36 minutes. I don't think that a Marlon Stewart was ready to play 33 minutes. I don't think these guys wanted that kind of workload or were ready for that kind of workload. And specifically, you know, that's why I think NDSU's depth really helped them this game. The fact that Richmond does go 10 deep, usually Dylan Miller not completely ready to play a ton. I think he only gave NDSU one short run there.
Just but, 2 minutes of play for Dylan.
Yeah, but I mean, the rest of the group played in the double digits and came in and provided the ability to get up and down the floor and tire out UND, and they did. They faded late. That game was close with 6 minutes left to play. NDSU ends up winning it by nine. But yeah, that 11-0 run was huge to just set the tone for that contest.
And one of the reasons why it was so close is the free throw. The charity stripe, you look at things for UND, maybe a little bit of home cooking there for them. They get off 34 free throw attempts compared to NDSU's 12. Now, again, you were only able to watch the first half and just a little bit of the second half, but what did you think about some of the foul calls, why Marlon Stewart was able to shoot 15 free throws? Geno Crandall gets there 8 times as well. Something called Keenan Walter gets there 8 times compared to NDSU's just 12. When Marlon Stewart outshoots the entire NDSU team from the free throw line, I'd like to think there's maybe a little bit of home cooking going on there, but what were your thoughts?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, anytime you go up to Grand Forks, there is the expectation that the officiating might be a little bit slanted, and I just, you know, I don't like to blame the officials, but you look at a 3-1 free throw difference, and it's difficult to explain that away. Certainly, UND has a style of play, getting up and down the floor, getting to the basket. A guy like Geno Crandall, who doesn't have such a pure stroke, a guy that wants to get into the lane, wants to get into the mess of things, wants to force up difficult shots that oftentimes go in, but I mean, wants to really get into the mix and get to the line. And NDSU just struggled though to keep guys in front of them. I mean, they did struggle with Stewart. And even when they didn't struggle with Stewart, he was throwing elbows and getting flagrant ones on Cameron Hunter. But that was a guy continuously going to the basket, and he got to the line a ton. But I think you still have to really evaluate what was truly going on with a 34-12 free throw disparity. The other funny thing about this game, I don't know if funny is the right word, but UND is the worst free throw shooting team in the Big Sky Conference. And
they go 29-34 and shoot 85% from
exactly,
the line.
Exactly. And I think they started 16-16. So what I'm getting at with this is we talked about the RPI before the game and the difference being 100 spots. And I'm not sure what NDSU's RPI is up to after the win. It might have even dropped because UND is so low. But there are underlying statistics that would tell you that it's possible UND and NDSU are further than kind of 9 points apart.
They may be. And again, when you look at this game, another statistic I want to look at here is just the way that NDSU was able to shoot it in terms of from the floor. You see them shoot at 59% compared to UND's 39. And I even kind of look at the rebounds. There's not a whole lot of rebounds to go between both teams. NDSU with 24, UND with 19. So you look at this game, only a 9-point victory for North Dakota State, Ross. I mean, does that, you know, shooting disparity kind of indicate to you this game should have been a 15-20-point road victory, or what does it tell you?
Well, I think it does tell you that, and I think you look at North Dakota State and the way that they defend and the way that they've defended teams all year, they're generally holding opponents in the 50s. You know, UND gets up into the high 70s. That's not generally what's going to happen in a North Dakota State game. How does that happen? Especially when you shoot 39%. You get to the free throw line 32 times. That's how that happens. So you get all those free points, you know, by whistles blowing, et cetera, et cetera. But NDSU's been an excellent defensive team all year. Holding UND to 39% shooting, I think that's something that can be expected. And I really think, on a neutral floor, without a 3-1 free throw, you know, disparity, and even that, but a free throw disparity in which UND is shooting 20% above their free throw percentage as a team,
right.
I really think NDSU played well enough defensively to keep UND in the 60s. Now, I also don't believe NDSU can shoot the ball 60% clip. So that
many teams can.
Right. So I think if you did like a they'll do the like your Pythagorean win total is an advanced statistic, and I'm not going to get into it, but what it basically says, if you simulate something a whole bunch of times, what does the win total end up being as far as percentages? And I think that this normally would have been something where NDSU was in the low to mid 70s and UND was in the high 50s to very low 60s. I felt like this should have been more of like a 75-60 type of game, but NDSU shot the freaking lights out. And UND got to the line a million times. So I think you can expect a lower point total in Fargo, and I think you can expect a wider margin of victory for NDSU in Fargo, because I think there really is a specific talent gap in between NDSU and UND, both at the top, because I think Paul Miller's a little bit better player than Geno Crandall, and I think that Tyson Ward is a lot better player than Marlon Stewart, despite what happened, on Friday. And honestly, too, just I've got a buddy who was Creighton's manager for a number of years and does not have a very high opinion of Marlon Stewart, the Creighton transfer. I just would anticipate a wider margin, specifically because of NDSU's depth. I think that's where UND really struggles.
All right, let's get into a couple of the individual player performances for North Dakota State. First guy I want to mention here is Spencer Eliason. He has started now the last five games for NDSU. He's played over 20 minutes in four of the five. You look at his rebounding numbers during those five starts, averaging north of five boards a game. You look at what he did against North Dakota specifically, 26 minutes on the floor, 9 points. He's able to grab four boards. He has two steals, a block. What were your thoughts on Mr. Eliason's performance against UND, and what have you seen from him of late, and you kind of looking forward into that Summit League schedule?
Well, I get into this every once in a while with buddies of mine that follow NDSU basketball, and just I think everybody wants to compare every NDSU big to Dexter Warner and Marshall Bjorklund, and that's not really fair. Marshall was a freak. I mean, he had post moves that you're never going to see at a mid-major level. He probably should have never been to North Dakota State, but he wanted to farm for the rest of his life, and that's how that happened. He was a wonderful offensive player. Your standard mid-major big is there to watch his guards run around and make plays, grab offensive rebounds, and put them back in the basket. That's what a mid-major big is there to do. And you see Spencer Eliason struggle a little bit earlier in the season. A lot of people are going to struggle against USC's bigs. A lot of people are going to struggle against Missouri State's bigs. These are huge guys. He's about to come up against the number two prospect in the NBA draft in DeAndre Ayton.
No pressure.
Right. But what I'm saying is, I think what you can expect from Eliason is more like what you saw against UND against mid-major teams. And you saw him go absolutely head-to-head with Connor Avance. And if you ask a UND fan or pay attention to what they do, after Crandall and Stewart, most of UND fans believe that Connor Avance is the third best player, or at least the third most important guy to what they do.
And he didn't do anything.
Right. But my point is this. Against mid-major bigs, against other guys that are in that 6'9", not super athletic, but strong type of build, and you're going to see that from Denver. You're going to see that from more than likely you're going to see that from Fort Wayne. He's going to be fine. He's going to be totally fine in Summit League play. And I think you can expect, 8 points, 5 boards, 6 points, 10 boards, that kind of presence. He's not going to be a shot blocker, a rim protector. I think you're going to have to lean more on guys like Miller and Goo that are a little bit more athletic for that. But what you saw from Spencer was the game slowing down. He's a fourth-year junior, and exactly what most good mid-major teams have at the post. Most good mid-major teams are going to rely on their guards for most of their scoring, and as they should. I mean, Bjorklund and Werner were exceptions, not the rule.
All right, and I also want to touch a little bit on Tyson Ward. I know you were mentioning this to me in the pre-production meeting, but it seemingly, as NDSU goes, Tyson Ward goes. You look at his performances in the wins this season, Missouri State, Florida A&M, Stetson, North Dakota. He scores double-digit points in all four of those games and in the five losses. He doesn't get to double digits. And you look at him coming into this game, 2 of 10 against Mississippi State, 1 of 5 against Missouri State, and then you get to see what he does against North Dakota. Puts up 15, 6, and 3. So, trying to mention it here, but it seemingly if Tyson Ward gets it going on the offensive side of the ball, good things are going to happen for NDSU.
Well, right, and that's what we talked about. You've got a situation where, North Dakota State loses 3 games in a row for the first time in like 5 years. Tyson Ward has 14 total points in that stretch despite 24 shot attempts. It just wasn't a good stretch for the young man, and he's only a true sophomore. Probably, as far as what the plan was when recruiting Tyson, probably being asked to do more than was in the plan for him. With that said, though, he's a special talent from a mid-major perspective. There are not a lot of 6'6 wings that can handle the ball the way that he does and shoot the ball the way that he does at 19 years old or 20 years old as a true sophomore. And I think he is kind of an anomaly in mid-major ball, or at least in Summit League ball. I mean, Richmond talked about having what they call high-level Northern Sun Conference guys. So guys like Paul Miller, guys like A.J. Jacobson, guys like Jared Samuelson that would dominate Division II basketball, but that maybe from an athletic profile fit more into that spectrum. They are too skilled to play at that level, but they do not athletically match up with like a Missouri State. Dan Gu, Tyson Ward, Chris Quayle, longer athletes. We don't know yet about Namdi Bandome, but these longer athletes, like I said, Quayle, Gu, and Ward, these are guys that Richmond's trying to build up into the program and get some length and athleticism to go along with these elite shooters and these heady players that you build a foundation like Bison basketball on. So Ward just needs to find the ability to bring it every night. And, nights like Stephen F. Austin can't happen when he doesn't score a point. That just can't happen if you're going to be, That can't happen if you're going to be the second best guy on the team, which is basically what he's been asked to do now that Kai Cabellis has left, and it's kind of the Paul Miller show.
And then finally, before we start to talk a little bit about the NDSU-Wofford game, let's talk about seemingly the biggest talking point is Jared Samuelson versus Cameron Hunter in terms of in that starting lineup. Another game, another 27 minutes for Mr. Cameron Hunter on the day, 9 points. He's able to grab 6 boards as well. Again, Jared Samuelson takes, you know, 3 shots, makes both of his 3 attempts, but again, Cameron Hunter continues to play big minutes. He's played 20-plus minutes in all but 1 game this season. Is this change going to happen before we start into getting into conference play?
I don't know, because he really seems like he's providing the only scoring punch that they have off the bench. Until they can kind of unlock the potential of Dangu and really get him moving, it doesn't appear that they're going to take the red shirt off of Ty Eady. You think about what you got coming off the bench. You have either Spencer Eliason or Dylan Miller coming off the bench. What are they coming off the bench to do? Hustle, rebound, and play defense. What's Chris Quayle coming off the bench to do? He's coming off to hustle, rebound, and play defense. So if you can't get Dangu to score, and they haven't yet this season, then I think you might need a guy like a Cameron Hunter to stay off the bench and provide that punch. But yeah, I mean, you talk about 4 for 6 from the field, grabbing 6 boards, hits a huge 3 with a hand in his face as time was winding down that game to push the lead back to 7 and basically end it. I mean, that's when that game ended, was after that Cam Hunter 3. So do I think that he is one of the best 5 players, or maybe not necessarily one of the best 5 players, but do I think that the best lineup NDSU could put on the floor includes Cameron Hunter? Yes, I do. Does that mean that he has to start? Maybe not.
All right, so, I mean, it's not every day you look at it. Your 6th man coming off the bench, he leads the team with 6 defensive boards, something to always note there. But before we get into this NDSU-Wofford breakdown, let's break quickly from a word from our sponsor.
How is it that NODAC insurance agents can answer all of your questions? When you focus on North Dakota, you know more. We don't have to respond to hurricanes in Florida, which makes it easier to respond to hailstorms and fender benders in Fargo. Hi, I'm Ross Ugly, your NODAC insurance company agent. I'm here in Fargo, which means the answers that give you peace of mind are right in front of you. Answers come easy with NODAC insurance. Call me at 701-532-0891 to get the answers to your insurance questions today.
All right, NDSU against Wofford in the Dome.
A 42-10 victory for NDSU. Ross, I know that from reading things in the pre-production meeting, from reading your preview and then kind of going through the game, seemingly it looked like you and the NDSU coaches were right on schedule with what you thought was the correct way to attack this Wofford team, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So what did you think about NDSU's offensive plan? And how do you think it was executed for this NDSU squad on Saturday?
Yeah, and I said specifically in the film review, you know, I'm not for a second claiming that anybody from the staff read that, cared, you know, for a minute.
It's an awfully big coincidence.
Yeah, I mean, it has nothing to do with me, but it was evident. It was evident to me. A fun little thing that we did last Friday was break down the previous game for Wofford, and I would love – you know, to have the time to break down 4 or 5 games at a time, but bills have to be paid.
Yes, they do.
So, we went through kind of their game, and I said, look at the size of these zones. Why is this happening? Well, it's happening because Wofford had these big roly-poly linebackers that they just refused to sub out. A lot of teams that run a 3-4, my beloved Green Bay Packers come to mind, will go to a 2-4-5 and play 5 defensive backs with the 4 linebackers, because generally your 2 outside linebackers and a 3-4 are going to be between 260 and 280 pounds. They're going to be edge defenders. They're going to be guys that push run plays in towards the middle of the field and guys that get after the quarterback and attack offensive tackles for pass rush purposes, not guys that you want dropping into coverage. But Wofford refused against Furman to take a defensive lineman off the field and replace him with a cornerback. What ends up happening is you end up with 3 big defensive tackle bodies, basically, which is exactly how Wofford plays. It's 3 defensive tackles. They don't have what you would call like your traditional 5-tech, and I'm kind of getting inside baseball here, but what a 5-tech is in a 3-4 defense is a guy that is normally going to line up, head up with a tackle. So you have a nose head up on the center, and you've got guys you know, between that, it's not always exactly, but between that guard and that tackle, and what you're looking for there is length. Generally, a guy who's 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", long arms, but up near 300 pounds. That's your ideal, you know, scouting perfection of a 5-tech or a 3-4 defensive end is going to be tall, long, strong, with a little bit of ability to pass rush. Not how Wofford did it. Three big old defensive tackles, slow. Guys that had struggled to get to Easton Stick on the pass rush. And so you're dropping a 270-pound linebacker into coverage with two 250-pound linebackers that, like I said, you want to talk about the main difference between Wofford and North Dakota State? Look at the body composition between Wofford's linebackers and NDSU's linebackers. You look at Nick DeLuca and you look at Jabril Cox, these are basically big safeties. I mean, these guys have, you know, you always talk about Dylan Radin says left tackle Adonis. These guys have linebacker Adonis bodies. These Wofford guys, like I was being kind when I said roly-poly. They have guts, man. They do not go through Coach Kramer's strength and conditioning program, and they can't run with Jeff Ilias down the field. They can't run with Connor Wentz down the field. It put a tremendous amount of stress on Wofford's defensive backs that, A, have to worry about the NDSU rushing attack, and, B, have to worry about the huge holes in the zones that these slow linebackers were leaving. And, yeah, I ended up being right. I mean, it played out exactly the way that I thought it was going to. But, you know, big and slow linebackers, refusing to sub, refusing to go to nickel except in third and long. And NDSU's tight ends and slot receivers and backs out of the backfield were a complete mismatch. You look at that touchdown to Seth Wilson. Mm-hmm. Bruce Anderson is 8 yards to his left, also running into the end zone absolutely wide open. Easton had his, you know, pick of wherever he wanted to throw it. And Easton Sticks, I mean, I am as pro-Easton as it gets. I think that he has gotten a bad rap from NDSU fans for the last season and a half. I just published his stats through 13 games of a junior season against Carson Wentz's. Higher yards per attempt. Completion percentage was the same. Touchdown to interception ratio was more impressive for Easton, and his running numbers were way more impressive. I'm not saying he's a better quarterback than the NFL MVP, but I am saying that people have been way too hard on him. With all that said, there are a lot of FCS quarterbacks that could have thrown into that zone. A lot. I mean, there were drops in the bucket available all day.
Certainly were. And on the defensive side of the ball, you alluded to it earlier in the show when talking about Nick DeLuca. I think the best linebacker on the field, and just in terms of the game, was Jabril Cox. The way he was able to roam from side to side, he was so much more athletic than some of the running backs, some of the tight ends he was asked to cover. And I'll ask you for seemingly this 58th time, how in the world is Jabril Cox at NDSU and not at a Power 5 program? And how large of an impact did you think he had on the game on Saturday?
It was huge. I mean, you and I both know the answer to that. I believe it was an ACL injury his junior year that screwed up his recruitment. You know, as far as I can tell from Jabril Cox, you're looking at a guy who certainly, you know, basically from Kansas City, no reason he's not a Kansas Jayhawk, probably no reason he's not a Kansas State Wildcat. You know, Oklahoma, but he looks that good. I mean, you know, and it's not like Oklahoma's known for a ton of defense. I think he should be in the Big 12, if not there, you know, the Big 10. He's got some size and some speed that just is not a thing that should have ended up at NDSU, but boy, should Bison fans be glad to have him. So normally NDSU is going to be in kind of a Will and a Sam setup. They went to this ridiculous 2-6 defense, and what I mean by a 2-6 is they went single high, right? So Trey Dempsey's free safety, and you've got your two cornerbacks. And then they would drop Robbie Grimsley down to cover the near side of the field a lot with Chris Board. And then we put Jabril Cox to the wide side of the field. So he had the most distance to cover. And still, Wofford ran most of their plays away from Cox to the short side of the field because he just could not be had. They couldn't keep their hands on him when they were blocking. And when they, you know, when he wasn't blocked, he was making plays for 3-4 yard losses. You saw, you know, it's all over my film review. I could have posted 8 clips like that, but I had to kind of control myself.
Yeah. So if you want to check that out, by the way, that is on thebisonreport.com. That is up upon film review piece there.
Right. So, you know, you talk about Will and Sam, but this is field and boundary. It's like they were playing cornerback. They just let him fly, and he did. It was unreal, super impressive. But I like the little wrinkle from NDSU's defensive staff, too, to throw those defensive ends in two-point stances and get them moving off the line of scrimmage right away, get their eyes up. Very, very impressive work by Entz and Kleiman. And something that was a little bit of a throwback. I had a chance to text with NDSU former defensive end Cole Jerick and ask him how they defended them before. And he said, exactly like that. They put us defensive ends up in two-point stances. We could see what was going on, and we could get moving side to side faster. So really cool throwback kind of wrinkle from NDSU's defensive staff. And it was highlighted by Jabril Cox.
When you look at NDSU's running game of the day, over 5 yards a carry on 49 attempts, 3 rushing touchdowns. Ty Brooks is able to get 73 yards on 10 carries. And when you kind of look at him, again, you talked about him in the Upon Film Review piece, what he's been able to do with his speed. We've mentioned how maybe the Fargo South duo of Ty Brooks and James Johannesson, NDSU got the better one compared to what James Johannesson showed at Minnesota. But what do you think about Ty Brooks' performance against Wofford? And do you think he could potentially be used in the return game as well when you look at Dimitri Williams as a kickoff return?
Yeah, that was my big thing. And honestly, one of the reasons I asked Kleiman about Cofield and Dunn, because I think Dimitri's fine, but doesn't make a lot of guys miss. Gets what's blocked for him, but oftentimes kind of runs into guys. And Brooks was so electric as a kick returner when they were able to use him back there because of his speed, because of his vision. I still want those 8 to 10 Ty Brooks carries. So fast and cuts, you know, basically without missing a beat. I mean, we've talked about his agility on this show before. It's elite, high-level stuff. I'd like to see him back a kick returner, absolutely. I think you know, Robbie Grimsley being the punt returner is not something I'm crazy about. Dimitri Williams being the kick returner is not something I'm crazy about. You need all hands on deck. And I think, you know, there is a degree to which it makes sense to tell Robbie Grimsley to basically fair catch every punt. And there is a degree to which it makes sense to use your fourth or fifth string wide receiver as a kick returner and not your number two running back. I totally get that. But you get into a situation, I think, you know, we'll get to this a little bit later, but I don't think Sam Houston State is going to be competitive in this game. With that said, no matter what happens in Frisco, whether it's James Madison or South Dakota State, it's going to be a dogfight. South Dakota State has proven this season that they can play with NDSU. They dealt them their only loss. James Madison is the last team to beat NDSU in the playoffs. These are real programs, and I think your best – if you're going to throw your best punch at James Madison or South Dakota State, it's going to be Ty Brooks at kick returner. So hopefully they get a different third running back that they can use. They can use Wilson. They know that. They can use Anderson. They know that. Hopefully, you know, Cofield or Dunn can come in and give NDSU that pop in the actual running game so that they can utilize Ty Brooks on a couple different things.
You also mentioned this in the start to the podcast in Robbie Grimsley. Now, you talk about it in your Upon Film Review piece. He's potentially gone from one of the least popular players with the fan base to a legitimate first-team All-American candidate. Again, you've been probably the president of the Robbie Grimsley fan club and what he's been able to do in his short time at NDSU, especially this season. So what were your thoughts on Grimsley's performance Saturday? And what have your – I mean, just – how has he kind of progressed here throughout his time as a Bison?
Well, Bison fans can get as mad at me as they want to, but – they are a needy, entitled bunch. I mean, it's the way that it is when you win 5 consecutive national championships. And I cannot tell you how difficult it is to play safety as a true freshman. To be a defensive back as a true freshman in NDSU's scheme is asking so much. And yes, he struggled with tackling as a freshman. He wasn't even that great at it last year. But he's always been a playmaker. And now he's pretty much shored up the tackling issue. And he remains by far the most productive playmaking safety. When I'm talking about playmaking, I'm talking about tackles for loss. I am talking about fumble recoveries, fumble forced, and interceptions. and a little bit of what you do once the ball does get into your hand. Do you look natural as a runner? Can you make a play after a turnover? Or do you just sort of bowl into the nearest offensive player? Mm-hmm. Robbie Grimsley is an elite playmaker. And I think that's what separates him from Dahl and Hegel and NDSU strong safety lore. He's not the tackler those guys were. But he is so much better at playmaking that I think he's a first-team All-American. Now, what we know now is that the that the All-American list is out and that the two guys that made it from North Dakota State are Austin Kuhnert and Nick DeLuca. Robbie Grimsley didn't make it. Trey Dempsey didn't make it. I don't think that that is correct. I don't think that there are only two players on NDSU's team, which right now looks to be the best in the country, that would make, you know, a list of the best 22 players in the game. But it's something NDSU's had to deal with basically every season except 2013. 2013, it seems like they finally got their due. But Robbie Grimsley, in my opinion, is one of the best two safeties in the FCS. I think there's a chance that Trey Dempsey is the other one. But he didn't make it. And I just, when you look at what that kid does for this team, it is so impressive. Specifically, and I don't think this, for whatever reason, I don't think this tweet is getting enough love. Check out the video when Grimsley starts on the far hash, and because they're running away from Jabril Cox, Wofford goes option left to the short side of the field. Grimsley's 12 yards off the line of scrimmage on the far hash and makes the play for a two-yard gain. Pretty much runs, I would guess, runs about a 28 or a 29-yard dash completely across the side of the field to make a play for just a two-yard gain, cutting off Trey Dempsey in the process. Pay attention to him. Pay attention to him for a whole game. Watch everything he does. They're going to lose Trey Dempsey, that's for sure, but they're going to bring back all the corners next year, and they're going to bring back Robbie Grimsley, and that is going to be a big, big deal.
Another thing I know that we talked about in the pre-production meeting was just the attendance figures throughout FCS quarterfinal playoffs. You look at the attendance numbers, NDSU's game does not sell out. Only 17,008 reported at James Madison. You have 13,500. And then you get to Sam Houston State, just under 5,700. South Dakota State has under 6,000 at that game. So what did you make of the attendance figures throughout FCS playoffs?
Yeah, the South Dakota State thing is kind of embarrassing. I think that really makes FCS football appear small time when you bring 5,000 people to a quarterfinal game. Definitely nothing to be proud of in Brookings as far as their fans showing up for what at the time, I mean, they've never been to the semis, so that was one of the biggest games in program history, and they brought 5,000 people to it or 5,800 people to it, 5,500 people to it. Just not impressive at all. And, like I said, bad for the subdivision. Looks bad on TV. It does. It's not good for the brand of FCS as a whole when people don't come to the game. So you want to know why the Friday Night Lights game is not the better game, James Madison, South Dakota State. It is the better game. I mean, that's the better game.
Vegas would tell you it's the better
right,
game.
Right, exactly. Look no further than the attendance. And I'm not really very pleased with NDSU students either because, you know, I've been there around there long enough. I know what the student section is, and that's where the gaps were. That's where the people were missing. It was unsold student tickets that were re-released to the public and not purchased. And so the sections that are normally students had some empty seats in them. And I get it. Trust me. I understand. College student, I had more than one adult beverage on more than one occasion. It is difficult to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and go tailgate for a game that starts at 11. You live that Big Ten life, Ryan. You understand what it means.
I'm well aware of the 11 a.m. starts.
It's hard. With that said, this is a semifinal game. And I don't care if you're 20.5-point favorites. I don't. You need to fill up a 19,000-seat stadium. You just have to. So, but I'm going to stop talking down to people.
All right, so before we kind of wrap things up for today, let's kind of look forward to the Sam Houston State team this weekend. I know that the line opened, I think, around 19. It's been bet up all the way to 21.5. So the Bison are over 3 touchdown favorites at home taking on the Sam Houston State team. And I know from, again, discussing things with Ross here before we started recording, that should be no surprise to anybody that's followed Sam Houston State's playoff record, but Again, what are your expectations for this game coming in this weekend? And just to kind of give fans and listeners here a little bit of what Vegas thinks of the James Madison SDSU game, James Madison is a 3-point home favorite, so essentially it is a coin flip. But NDSU, 21.5-point favorites here as we record on Tuesday. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a big Bison victory. I probably might even pick this one outside the spread. So we'll get into that. We'll get into NDSU's game against Valley City State, which I understand isn't going to be a lot, but, I mean, we'll get into that a little bit. And, yeah, that's what we'll kind of pay attention to moving forward.
All right, so if Ross has mentioned it numerous times here throughout the podcast, please head on over to the Bison Report to check out his Upon Film Review piece about Robbie Grimsley, about Jabril Cox, everything about the 42-10 victory for NDSU. Head on over, get the latest and greatest in terms of NDSU football content, NDSU basketball content, as we look forward here to the semifinal game this weekend. It's also going to be interesting to see how things go with Antonio Montero on Friday. So again, please head on over to the Bison Report to check things out there. So we want to thank you guys for listening once again. If you can, please rate and review the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, whatever podcasting form you found this at. And we will be back later this week to preview the semifinal game this weekend. Thanks for listening, and go Bison.